She is not sure when she resumes breathing. The remaining skin-eaters, the sane ones anyway, immediately fall to arguing. Galien instructs Sarl to watch her, which he does with a kind of crazed reluctance. She and the mad sergeant take turns gazing at the captain in disbelief. At one point, Sarl grasps the very branch that Lord Cossiter had tried to snap in his final moment. Crouching a pace away, he uses it to poke at his dead captain's face. He presses the tip against the waxen forehead, rolls the face skyward, then jumps when it slips, and rocks back to face him. He turns to Mymara and cackles.
"He's not dead,"
he says, like a drunk keen to slur some fact that others thought obvious.
"Not the captain, no."
Shouts climb from the near distance. Pacwas is jabbing Galien's shoulder with a long finger.
"He's too hard for hell."
It was like climbing down a monstrous rabbit hole. A strange anxiousness dogged the old wizard as the brightness climbed in stages above him. The pit fell at an angle instead of dropping vertically, opening about a ramp of packed debris and earth, like a burrow that was at once a road to the underworld. The turret cellars formed a kind of pitched roof above them, three distinct levels of corridors, haft, and chambers cracked open like eggs. The depths opened before them, steeped in sulphurous mystery.
"Look,"
Cleric said, motioning toward the side of the tunnel. But Akamian had already glimpsed them in the gray light. Three gashes hooked like scythes, the center one the longest, the innermost curving within its compass, while the outermost arced away at an angle. Akamian immediately recognized the mark. Any man in the Three Seas would have. The three sickles had been a common heraldic device since far antiquity, the symbol adopted by Triamus the Great. The scoring of long, curved claws. The spore of dragons. A profound ache climbs out from her back, roots itself in her knees and neck, but still she sits hugging her shins. She cannot move. Galien returns, leading the others. Sarl scampers from his path, his captain's head clutched tight to his chest.
"So what are you going to do?"
she asked the columnary.
"We're going to wait for Cleric to return. Then we're going to relieve him of that pretty pouch. Songus has already yanked the two Koray from beneath Lord Cossiter's hauberk." Galien smiles at her in the leering manner she knows all too well. "In the meantime," he says, "we're going to feast on the banquet the gods have delivered to us." Her look is so sour it seems a miracle that he can grin.
"Feast? On what?"
"The day is dry and bright. Beautiful. Wind falls through the lazy treetops, shushing the bestiary that is the world. Blood clots across the leaves.
Peaches, my sweet. Peaches."
Skidding on their rumps, the old wizard and the nonman king followed the burrow into the airy darkness. The antechamber to the coffers. The upper palsal had been reduced to balconies hanging amputated in the black. Debris choked the floors of the palsal proper, heaped toward the sides by the passage of some monstrous bulk. Akamian shuddered, glimpsing what was left of the nonman friezes that adorned its walls. Memories of Kyrlogus, he supposed. The great gate of wheels had been obliterated. He could see its ensorcelled remains scattered through the ruin. A marmoreal white of broken incantation wheels, the chapped green of bronze cams and fittings. Raw blackness gaped before him. "So," a dull and long-suffering portion of his soul murmured, "the coffers have been looted." He stood motionless, gazing in abject dismay. So much suffered, so many dead. For nothing. The great refrain of his miserable life. The madness, when he pondered it, was that he had believed it could be otherwise, that he would trek all this distance, survive this far, and actually find the coffers intact, the map to Ishwar, waiting for him like a low-hanging plum. He almost laughed aloud for thinking it, the thought that fate might be kind. This, he realized, this was what his fate had been all along. Snared in the machinations of his enemy, who had known his mission even before he had tripped across it, confronted with the preposterous issue of his preposterous hopes, he had sought truth and been delivered to madmen and a dragon instead. A dragon. A Raku of old. He could almost hear the skies laugh. Sparing neither word nor glance, the old wizard and the Nonman King stepped across the cracked threshold, and at long last passed into the coffers. The reek watered his eyes, mingled with his terror, so that it seemed he wept for fear. Sulphur, the smoke of predatory life, and rot, profound and gangrenous. The putrefaction that ties a string to your stomach, and pulls hard whenever breath is drawn too deep. A Kamian could feel as much as hear the thing breathing in the blackness, the whoosh of enormous furnace bellows. He could scarce see the debris beneath his feet, yet the sound grew into a kind of vision, such as the mischief of imagination. Great lungs betokened great limbs. The deep reptilian creak conjured images of scaled hides, of lipless jaws and grinning teeth. A mighty horror awaited them, and a portion of the old wizard did not want to see. A portion of him preferred the hysterics of his soul's eye. They came to a slope of heaped ruin, picked their way to the summit. The blackness yawned out about them, a motionless vacuum. Cleric uttered a sorcerous phrase. His eyes and mouth flared with meaning. The pale brilliance of a Cyrillic point appeared above them, and the blackness fled to far places, leaving a globe of empty, illuminated air. Dragon. Raku. According to legend, the first Sohonk discovered a vast cavern when laying the library's foundations. They dredged the depths, squared the walls, pillared the open spaces, creating a secret subterranean citadel. It was no Shainrao, whose sorcerous research had cast such long shadows across the future, who would make it his school's treasury, a vault for the world's greatest glories and darkest terrors. The famed coffers. Perhaps the ancient architects had feared the ceiling the earth had provided them. Perhaps the chaotic weave of natural lines offended their sense of beauty and proportion. Either way, they constructed a roof with the post and lintel principles they used to raise their temples. This second ceiling had long since collapsed in its center, littering the floor with the ruin of giant stone beams and the cracked drums of toppled pillars. Peering between the remaining columns, the old wizard had the impression of a black lake hanging above all that could be seen, as if the very world had been turned on its head. Gone were the ponderous lantern wheels, gone were the narrow aisles, gone were the racks and shelves that had organized a thousand years of sorcerous hoarding. Treasure and debris matted the floors, a ragged landscape of contradictions that piled higher toward the chamber's heart, coins graveling the rack of shattered frescoes, a tripod capsized in a swell of mounded powder, a crown stayed beneath a jutting beam of granite, a chest of cracked bronze, spilling rivulets of jewels between horns of broken stone. Because of age-old accumulations of dust and tarnish, nothing glittered, nothing gleamed. Apart from the dragon. The shadows cast by intervening columns were absolute, so only fragments of the beast could be seen. Horned ridges, wings folded into scarred curtains. Scales like overlapping shields, pale with filth and bronze. A single nostril, weeping smoke. The beast was old, Akamian realized, exceedingly old. Raku never stopped growing, so it stood to reason that any dragon he encountered in his waking life would dwarf the ancient monstrosities from his dreams.
But this... wings that could have tarped the Shilla Amphitheater in faraway Aeognisus. A torso broad enough to haul the largest Sarangi Carrick, yet long enough to coil about the small mountain of treasure and ruin. Were it to rear onto its hind legs, the beast would stand as tall as any of the Mop's unnatural trees. The bellow lungs continue to roar and croak in the deeps of a Commian's hearing. The sulfur pinched his own breath, quick and shallow and warm-blooded. Nausea rooted through his innards. He turned to Cleric. Bleached in his own light, the Nonman King stood rapt, his left foot braced against a headless statue. The Cyrillic point made polished marble of his skin, a diamond weave of his nimal hauberk. He looked more thoughtful than afraid or astounded. "This," Cleric murmured, his gaze fixed on the slumbering beast. "This is where I am meant to die." "You and my loincloth," Akamian replied. The Nonman turned to him, his face blank and wondering. A vagrant pain seemed to seize his expression. Then Nilgicus, king of the last mansion, laughed. The sound boomed through the hollows, a cackle that rolled like thunder, deep and earthen and utterly, insanely, unafraid. Akamian grimaced more than smiled. "Ah, Siswatha," Cleric said, swallowing his mirth. "How I cherish your old—" "Old," the very ground seemed to croak. "So very old." Rasping through rope mucus, sheathed in a bottomless wheeze, the voice was more than loud, more than deep. It was great, in a sense of absurd disproportions. Words cast across faraway orders of strength and immensity. Akamian suddenly felt like a fly in the presence of a Sempis crocodile. The scrape and scruff of shifting debris, the tinkle of little things falling. The dragon stirred upon its heap, raised its armored chest on limbs crooked and knotted like hoary old tree trunks. Riven with horror, Akamian watched the head wag across a lane of pale light, the crest battered and majestic. The saurian skull, long-jawed and wicked. "We have flown and flown, seeking your cities. But ruin was all we could find. Ruin and vermin shrank." Dust rained from the crotches of every hanging seam, every granite joist. The ancient Raku hoisted its head, exposed its segmented throat in absolute confidence of its invulnerability. In an absurd instant, Akamian grasped the reason why the ancient Kunieri called them Suthogi. "Tell me, has the world ended?" "Worms." "The world yet lives," Cleric called into the gloom. "In the south, where the snow falls as rain." Wisps of fire, exhalations mighty enough to throw ships from their courses. The thing's head lowered in their direction, at last fully revealed in Cleric's light.
"The world lives?"
Akamian did not so much will himself to move as will himself to will. So much is forgotten in the flush of abject terror, from the man's bowel to his breathing. "The beast is dead," Cleric murmured. "Dead and blind." The old wizard struggled to peer through his terror, to study the great head beyond the jaws, to see more than the predatory malevolence in its lines. It differed from the ancient dragons of his dreams. No surprise, given the florid diversity characteristic of the species. Its head was more aquiline, as if built to root out prey hidden in burrows, and a mane of black iron tusks flared from its brows, bloomed into chattering skirts along the back of the beast's skull. But where smaller horns serrated the line of the beast's left brow, only stumps and savage tissue adorned the right. The eye beneath, he could see, had rotted away long, long ago.
"What do you mean?" the old wizard muttered in reply. "It breathes. But men's eyes, once attuned to a possibility, scavenge evidence of their own volition. Suddenly the old wizard saw the bronze hide sagging like a hauberk, as if detached from the greased flesh beneath. The shrunken gums, the second eye socket, rotted as hollow as the first.
"I breathe,"
the yawing, croaking voice boomed through the underworld spaces.
"It is my curse to breathe, so long as the world lives."
The dragon was dead, or almost so.
"Turn from this place," the bronze-shelled corpse said. "Flee to your hearths and tell those who would listen how you survive for telling the first, the father, the world yet lived."
Madness. Madness and more madness. But there was always more world than explanation. To come so far, so close, there was no turning from this place.
"May I beg but one dispensation?" a Kamian cried.
A hissing pause.
"Grasping," the dead beast said, shadowy and mountainous. "Men are forever grasping."
"I search for a map," the old wizard said.
Cleric regarded him.
"Turn from this place, mortal. I will not part with the merest fraction of my hoard."
"But what use could you have of trinkets and baubles?"
"To lure fools such as you. Turn from this place. Turn! Come to me when the world has truly ended."
"I will not!"
the old wizard cried, casting his frail voice against the dragon's booming echo. Thought and passion raced panic through his soul. All at once, he found himself marveling at his own stubborn courage, weighing the mad consequences of his baiting and wondering, most of all, that a dragon could be dead, yet speak and breathe still.
"I cannot!"
The raku laughed, a sound like a thousand hacking lungs.
"Avarice and necessity are ever confused in the souls of men."
"No, no, necessity alone drives me."
"So does fancy become scripture."
The old wizard grappled with his anger, the urge to retort. "The coffers," he reminded himself, hearing Sorrel's crazed voice as he did so.
"The coffers." "So does greed become God."
In a blink, it seemed, he saw through the fog of intervening weeks and the lies that accumulated in his veins. In a heartbeat, the confusion that was Kiri vanished, leaving windswept fact in its wake. He had murdered men in his fictions, imperiled the woman he loved. He had marched across the desolate bosom of Eerwa. For this moment, this very encounter. "It happens." He breathed deep, held the foul air against his hammering heart.
"A bargain, then," he cried in sudden inspiration. "I would strike a bargain with you."
The grating of coiled limbs, the heaving of air through rotting windpipes.
"What could you have that I might desire, mortal?"
The old wizard clawed his scalp.
"Truth. Truth is all I have."
The raku raised its bulk from the heap's summit, wagged its enormous crown in the air.
"Yes. You reek of suffering."
As deep as graves, the eyeless sockets fixed on the old wizard.
"I smell deeds long dead and fears, immortal fears.
Perhaps you possess riches, after all.
It creaked forward, loosing tiny landslides of debris and treasure.
Truth it is, Manling.
It descended its miserly summit. Then more than 2 elephants tall at the shoulder stalked the blackness beyond the immediate pillars, dragging ruin in its wake.
Show me one truth, and you shall have your merest fraction.
The Commian retreated, fairly stumbled doing so.
I'm not sure how to begin.
He glimpsed its dead grinning maw between columns.
What is this map you seek?
The will to lie leaned hard against the old wizard's thought, but he resisted, understanding that the beast before him was as much spirit as flesh. Who can say what the dead hear, when the ears are pricked to the voices of the living? So he began describing his dreams, the way Anasarimber Kel'Momas had charged Seswatha with the map to Ishwal, the final refuge of the ancient Kunyerek High kings. But he quickly became tangled in words. Every name he mentioned required more names to be explained. Names piled upon names, all begging explanation. The eyeless creature yawned, revealing the furnace that smoldered within the dead hull of its frame.
"Truth is our bargain," it rumbled, croaking out of the blackness.
The head, cadaverous and crocodilian, leaned forward menacingly.
"What is this map you seek?"
The old wizard blinked at the monstrous spectre, chewed his bottom lip.
"Vengeance," he said. "And whom do you seek to murder?"
"Anasarimber Kel'Momas, the Aspect Emperor."
"And his crime? What indignity did he inflict upon you?"
Instead of glimpsing Esmonet, the old wizard saw Maimara in his soul's eye, pregnant and derelict, a prisoner of the captain. If he failed here, if he stumbled.
"Enough," he cried. "You have your truth."
"Is not truth infinite?"
Mucus snapping like bowstrings.
"Yes, but is,"
the bulk stamped forward one step, fissuring stone,
"not,"
the iron horn chin dropped as a wolf,
"truth,"
fire wicked from carcass nostrils,
"infinite."
The pillared landscape hummed with reverberations. Sulfur and rot settled as a mist through the black. The old wizard fairly cried out for sudden weight of cleric's hand on his shoulder.
"He plays you," the Nomman said, his face white and serene. "There is no separating him from his hoard. He is too wicked. And he has slumbered here too long."
The last Nomman king turned back toward the scaled abomination.
"He?" a Commian asked witless.
"Wutayat."
Like some beast in nocturnal seas, the Raku shrank into the darkness. Laughter like sloughing cliff sides crashed through the ancient hollows.
"He dies from the outside," cleric said, "because hell sustains him from within."
"Cunning," the Raku groaned out from the black. "Cunning, cunning, Ishroy!"
"I have seen this before," Nilgikas said, peering after the thing.
He turned to the old wizard and smiled.
"I remember."
The Commian gazed at the Nonman, found himself wondering who was more hoary, more impossible, the ancient undead dragon or the ancient inhuman king.
"So what do we do?"
Something resembling dark humor flashed in the Nonman's eyes. Without explanation, he began picking his way toward the wheezing blackness.
"Run," he called to the old wizard behind him. "Save them while you still can."
"Them?" A passing glance over his nimble armored shoulder.
"Your wife and child."
Like most dwellings in the slums of Carathuzel, the worm, The brothel my Mara had lived in was walled against everything surrounding and open only within. Two mercenaries, little more than thugs, really, manned the entrance, festooned with ornamental menace. Every mouth needs fangs. But once past them, all was carpeted invitation. Gold paint, garish tapestries representing battles that may or may not have happened. Incense and obscure liquors, sunlight showered the courtyard gardens. Patrons reclined on embroidered settees in the reception hall, talking and laughing in low, shameless voices, their eyes flicking to and fro, as if counting the bare-chested children. The betting cells lined the eastward wall, as demanded by luck and tradition. Despite her prize, she would be chosen. She was always chosen. Leading him by a single callous horned finger, she would hear grunts and whimpers and moans, and sometimes shrieks and sobs. A kind of numbness would own her, and she would flatten against her motions, as if against a wall in a slice of shadow. And she would be hidden, even as she scampered nude before the lecherous eyes of many. Very similar to Kiri, when she thought about it, watching Galien's hanging grin. Perhaps this would be easy. Dying. The old wizard did not flee. He found himself chasing the Nonman King instead, muttering wards as he tripped across the floors. With every step the Nonman King dragged his Cyrillic point with him, illuminating the wasted interior of the coffers. Rather than retreat, the great Raku watched eyeless.
"Wu-Tayat!"
Cleric bellowed. Cold pricked the wizard's skin, for Wu-Tayat was a name drawn from the most ancient days of the war, where men were little more than slaves or vermin. Wu-Tayat the Terrible, the Black and Golden, the Father of Dragons. Revealed in all his decayed glory, the Raku reared with chitinous grace, its neck hooking like a swan's, its mammoth head poised low. Blinding vomit cracked its lizard grin. Fire. Stone blasting. Gold melting. Unlike anything a Kamian had ever dreamed. The world vanished and all became white blindness, roaring, sparking. His outermost wards simply blew away. His innermost buckled about cracks like incandescent veins.
"Cleric!"
he cried, feeling a tongue of flame lap his arm and cheek. There was no time. Blinking, he stepped into the air, into utter blackness. The Nonman's Cyrillic point had winked into non-existence. Everyone was blind. The wheezing grate of furnace bellows. Then a second geyser of fiery gold, this one roiling beneath his feet. Thunder and clacking stone. The light of it painted the ceiling and high pillars in pulsing tan and yellow. Crying out new wards, a Kamian climbed into the gap of a collapsed lintel, stepped through the grand chamber's false ceiling high into the dark.
"I am Kuya!"
the Nonman King cried from places unseen.
"I am Ishroy! Five of your sons and daughters have I slain!"
"You are but a snail," the impossible beast roared. "A snail torn from its shell! I am Nilgikis. I am Cleric. And you will hear my sermon."
Even high and hidden, a Kamian could tell the Nonman ran as he called out, sprinted over ruin.
"Fool, I am the first. My hide is bronze. My bones are iron."
Above the ceiling, the old wizard floated through a second, more barren world. One roof with hanging precipices and floored with racks of masonry, ancient and enormous.
"You are blind!"
Cleric shouted, the resonance of his voice thinned by the thunder that it followed.
"You are a beggar, a scavenger, a prisoner of your own spite. Your flesh is rotted, the stone of your strength cracked long ago. As the ages have rotted your soul, Kunaroi."
The beast spit another cataract of roaring fire, illuminating all the chinks and breaches in the ceiling. Akamian walked across emptiness toward the central pit, which, given the darkness of the cavernous attic, glowed like an afterlife of fire. Robbed of their supporting columns, the granite lintels had sheared according to the caprice of load and fracture. He alighted on the longest of these ribs, strode down the length of its powdered back. Fires small and large burned throughout the pillared spaces below. He saw Cleric, the briefest of glimpses, flit between distant pillars and vanish into far shadows. He was running circles.
"If I perish a fool," the Nonman cried, "then I perish my own fool, not a slave like you, Raku Jaroi."
Akamian paused at the hanging precipice, gazed down upon the heaving beast. Coiled like a bloated serpent, the father of dragons turned and turned to the sound of Cleric's voice, like a leashed dog about its stake. Only retching fire instead of barking, maelstroms that engulfed the scorch isles.
"I exceed my makers," the scale shining beast thundered. "Not even the black heaven commands me."
The old wizard swayed on his perch, squinted against the smoke and sparks that buffeted his wards. Cleric distracted the creature he knew. Using taunts to goad its pride, the Nonman King provoked it precisely so that Akamian could do what he was doing. If only he knew what that was.
"Spinning in circles," Cleric cried, laughing. "Twisting hide against hide. So it has always been, Raku Jaroi. Think! Think of the desolate ages!"
The blind beast stamped to and fro directly below. It swung its horn-crowned head in an attempt to anticipate the running Nonman, spewed torrents of braided fire. Akamian swayed, nearly retched for the reek of putrescence.
"Desolation is my birthright!"
"Think, old man, think! Such things that I remember, Kunaroi, twisting in the void for sailing ages, watching my makers descend as locusts upon world after world, reducing each to 144,000, and wailing to find themselves still damned. Dragons, monstrosities literally bred to battle and destroy the ancient Kuya. So much of the Gnostic armory was devoted to sorcerous duels or the mass killing of mundane men. What did Siswatha use?
Only to arrive here, broken and exhausted," Cleric cried. "Yes, yes, at last, the promised world. I was the first, with dread still upon my shoulders. I was the first to step from our hallowed ark, to set eyes upon the land of our redemption."
The Nonman's laughter rose clear as sunlight from the booming echoes.
"And now look at you, blind, hidden in the dirt, curled about the shit of dead ages."
A cry like the blast of many waters.
"Because this world yet lives," the undead beast roared. "Because this world refuses to die."
Teetering above the monstrosity, Akamian shouted his cant. A skinny old man hollering in a skinny old voice. The Novaratic Spike, a Gnostic war cant contrived to batter through great city gates.
"Murder! Murder is our salvation!"
Light balled in Akamian's outstretched palms. The mighty Raku lashed its head from side to panic side, raised its smoking snout at the instant of the cant's completion. Lines of light snapped in and out, deflecting and intersecting, forming a flying sheet of triangles, reproducing tip to tip, base to base, flashing down as swift as any bolt or arrow. A noise that struck blood from the skin. The spike exploded against the creature's left shoulder, hammered it squealing down the side of its mound. Thrashing, Wutiat howled fire into the air. A brilliant geyser jetted up through the ceiling pit. A rooster's tail of brilliance washed across the cavern roof. Cascades of raw stone came crashing down. Akamian crouched low on the lintel, muttered ward after ward. A thunderclap from below, and he heard it through the dragon's mewling shriek, the sound of a Nanmen Kuya singing his world-breaking song, the sound of a famed Ishroi, a hero of dead ages, closing with his ancient foe. The old wizard stood firm on his perch, cried out another Novaratic cant. Below him the father of dragons coiled in defense, spewed fire into looms of Kuyan incandescence. Light flared from the wizard's palms, made crimson glass of his hands. But the dragon had coiled to leap, not to shield. The wizard's spike gouged slopes of treasure and rubble. Moldered and wretched, the dragon vaulted into the underworld attic, stretched forth its diseased wings. For a crazed heartbeat, Akamian found himself standing frail and astonished beneath the plated monstrosity. Light from the conflagration below illuminated its undersides, gleamed across horns and scaled flanges. Wings scooped dark air. It knew, Akamian realized. The beast drew back its battered skull, yanked open its maw in a feline hiss. It knew precisely where he stood. Fire, wards dissolving like egg whites in a stream, concussions, blistering skin, the triggering of incipient wards. A pier of stone collapsed beneath his feet. "Years uncounted!" it boomed from the cavern attic. 10,000 seasons have I lived without eyes!" The old wizard fell, cartwheeled down the beast's heap of treasure and debris. Blinking, coughing, he tried to claw his way upright, too stunned to orchestrate the counterpoise of voices, inner and outer, required for sorcery. He beat at his burning hair and beard. He felt an arm draw him up, saw Cleric peering down at him, the porcelain lines of worry and relief. He heard the whoosh of conflagration, the clack and thunder of enormous collapses. Ancient pillars toppled, sheets of masonry dropped. The world itself seemed to shrug, then crash upon them. Masses of stone pummeled the Nanmen's wards, a rain of godlike fists. The last shreds of light were pinched to utter black. Ringing ears, the taste of dust. "It has buried us," the Nanman said, in the clacking aftermath. "Shut us in." She kicks off her boots. She unties the laces of her jacket, pulls it back from her bare shoulders, lets it slide of its own weight down her arms. She shakes it from her wrists. It slumps across the humus. She clasps her shift, winces at the reek of it as she draws it over her head. The swathes of down in her armpits tingle. Open air finds her breasts. Her nipples rise to the kissing breeze. She unlaces her leather breeches. Wriggling, she pushes them below her knees. She steps from them. Open air finds her thighs. Her sex. She grabs the wire circumflex, the one she found on the battlefield, hanging between her breasts. But she releases it, loath to forsake the protection of symbols, even false ones. Motionless, the scalpers gaze. Sorrow gropes his crotch with his free hand. The captain's head continues to glare from the crook of his arm. Even Cole, wasted to the very lip of death, watches with licentious hunger. They are but five, yet countless others seem to crowd them, making pews of the forested ruins, all gazing with lidless eyes, some in outrage, others with pity and hope, and still more with lust and crass desire. She thought the Kyrie would ease her passage, that it might have delivered her to the place where she had always hidden, for this was nothing new. But she was wrong. You have to be more than your motions to hide behind them, and she is not. The Kyrie has whittled her down to the bone of what happens. She shudders with something deeper than shame, as if garments more profound than leather and fabric have been shed. The cloth of hope and flattery, perhaps. All the things she has called herself in the pursuit of her pain-numbing vanities. Sorceress. Princess. Warrior. All the lies she has conjured to hide the fact of her slavery. For the first time, it seems, she is wholly what Scripture has made of her, and nothing more. The quiver on the hip of the bowman, the pillow beneath the head of the king. She is chattel. She is sustenance. She is pleasure and progeny. She is naked. The two crouched for what seemed 100 heartbeats after the clamor had settled, probing the cavernous black with pricked ears. They heard nothing, save the groan and clatter of settling debris. Wielding ethereal geometries, the old wizard and the non-man king began heaving aside masses of rock and masonry. Throughout history, kings and princes had sought to bend the few to menial tasks, to works that only the sweat and misery of thousands could otherwise accomplish. Roads, fortifications, temples. Wars had been fought to resist them. For men who could manipulate the very frame of existence, sorcerers, demanding such mean labor, was nothing less than an outrage akin to asking lords to wash the feet of beggars. As Sotokara, the Grand Master of the extinct Surartu, famously declared to Triamus the Great, to do as slaves was to be as slaves. Even still, caprice demands all men, no matter how exalted their station, play the menial from time to time. Every sorcerer living knew some cant adapted to the moving of earth. The darkness clacked and roared with their excavations. The devastation of the coffers stretched out behind them, easily outrunning their paltry light. A twilight world the old wizard was loath to consider, lest he recall the hopeless task of finding a single golden map case amid such rack and ruin. Only two columns stood that they could see. The others lay heaped and toppled like a felled forest. Shelves of rock continued to fall from the inverted cliffs and valleys hanging above, sporadically showering the blasted landscape with debris. Huffing with effort, Akamian sank pinions into the mounded wreckage, raked it away with the flash of miracle lights. More debris would tumble into the gap he had cleared, but never quite so much as he had removed. Braced on ever-uncertain footing, spilled gravel, canted lintels, or the curve of pillared drums, they thundered forward, dredging the entrance clear. When light at last rimmed the uppermost rocks before them, they paused to collect their breath and courage. "The beast awaits us," Cleric said. Akamian nodded. He could see Fel'Wutiat in his soul's eye, poised to flush the waiting passage with coiling fire. Ambush was a notorious tactic of the Raku. For all their savage might, they were exceedingly intelligent and devious creatures, far more so than Shrank. They had no choice but to rush the burrow, somehow survive the sum of its power. "One of us must shield," he said, "while the other casts into the fire." The Nonman King began to nod, then whirled toward the darkness behind them. Frowning, Akamian followed his gaze into the high void, peered, squinting. He raised a thumb to scratch away a fleck of grit. It breached the light, smoke that became a ghost, that became shining bestial reality, its claws outstretched, its wings hooked about emptiness, its horn-crowned head vanishing behind gaping jaws. The ancient dragon dropped out of the blackness. Akamian threw up his feudal arms. Conflagration.